All right, we're back.
The fellows are back. Everybody's... Austin's been here. Austin basically slept here over the entire holidays. He's worked every single show. So you're done. There's no acclimation period for you. You make a mistake today, it's because of exhaustion, not rust. No. See, that's already a mistake. Exhaustion. Yeah. Your brain thought that was a good time for that. Wrong.
Exhaustion mistake. Yeah,
exhaustion brain. Mark is back. I think you were gone the entire time. And the kiddos, Pete and Joe.
We're back.
All of you guys have family here, right? Nobody had to travel.
Yep. My aunt and uncle were flying in from New Orleans, but then ended up not being able to because of the storm.
Yeah.
So, like, their flight got pushed back, like, 7 times or something. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't end up coming, which sucked. But everyone else was here, luckily.
I like picturing your aunt and uncle who live in New Orleans as, like, living in the French Quarter and speaking like that.
Yeah, they do live close to it, actually.
They're, like, the people that in... what's the Marlon Brando movie? Why am I blanking on this? Apocalypse Now, when they come across those people, the French people that are just hold up. That's your family down in Louisiana.
Louisiana. Yeah.
Oh, Josiah, we will not be making it for Christmas. We are sorry.
I've heard that
we
accent
would have loved
so many
to
times.
Have seen you, Josiah. Yeah, it's too bad. Sorry that you didn't get to see them.
Unlucky.
I keep talking about this with a ton of people. I don't know if everybody feels the same. This Christmas just bit me in the ass. It came out of nowhere. I don't know if it was because it was on the weekend, if it was because of the travel that scheduled, like, stressed everybody out and changed the plans or whatever, but normally I feel big time rested and a little rejuvenated. I was definitely ready to get back to work. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I was off for too long. This podcast, listen, bosses don't, like, to the bosses, listen, shut up, okay? I'm not saying I'm working more, right?
Right.
You guys, you're supposed to laugh at that.
But no, seriously, my fault.
No, I'm not working more. I'm not out here to be Austin grinding away during the entire holiday. But yeah, I hit my limit of, okay, I need to do something. I need to work. There's only so many days where you can socialize, and boy, my liver took a pounding. Well, it's just a lot of booze over the holiday. Like, you see family, and then you do another family event, then another family event, then you're catching up, and then all of a sudden friends want to have, you know, dinner parties, get back. You're trying to catch up with everybody, fill everybody into the social calendar.
Yep.
You have New Year's Eve that just looms over top of all the socializing
it's
with
the
people.
It's the end game.
Yeah, and then, and my New Year's Eve hangover was just a 10 out of 10 spectacular hangover. I really did the entire thing. Mixed everything. Decided, yeah, sure. Red wine, whiskey, beers, vodka.
Oh my
goodness. Just let's have it all. Let's have a time and not be in your mid-30s. No, wrong. That was wrong to do. But no, nobody's feeling me on that, though. Even behind the glass, nobody, like, it's just the weekend holiday or just the rush to it. And
I don't know. It felt like Christmas once we were off work, but earlier in December, it didn't really feel like Christmas, you know? And I think maybe it's the lack of Christmas decorations or, like, not enough Christmas music, but...
Not enough Christmas music.
Yeah, usually I do my annual Love Actually watching, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't do that this year.
Yeah, you're not the guy to ask. I forgot that you're not, like, a human being.
Pete, wait.
The humans.
Are you on the war against Christmas train?
Oh, no. No,
he obviously loves Christmas.
Oh, He loves Christmas. Yeah.
He loves Christmas.
But it sounds like he thinks there's a war against Christmas.
No, I don't even understand how he... No, this is just...
This is just Pete.
No, this is just a Gen Z kid going, there's no thing. It's like, yeah, man, you don't go in any stores. You don't listen to the radio.
Good point. Good point.
Like, you don't... You stay inside and you live on your internet bubble. And yeah, what do you expect? How do you expect to see Christmas things? And then you didn't watch your one Christmas movie that you were in control of.
Christmas was awesome for me. I didn't really feel like that at all.
Yeah, everything's awesome.
I had a great Christmas day. It just felt like it wasn't. I was trying to relate to JD.
Mark,
JD felt alone.
Do you feel relaxed? Do you feel like this was normal Christmas? Do you feel like this Christmas from New Year's was off? No.
Honestly, the only one. I felt pretty relaxed. It was just really low key for me personally. So I was, you know, it was hard not to relax.
Mine started maybe. Okay. Maybe I'm alone in this. I just thought that the holiday falling on the weekend was weird. and both holidays that we had.
I can agree with that.
That we had Christmas and New Year's Day. It just felt like at the end of the week, we all hit the break and we went into it. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, okay, cool. Christmas is here. It's this weekend. Sorry, what?
Yeah.
Christmas this weekend? And then coming out of it, it was actually kind of nice. I don't mind this format for New Year's Eve moving forward, where you basically get the double dip hangover day. That is not, because New Year's Eve falls on a Sunday, and then you get the Monday off work, but then you're back at a Tuesday. We need that buffer zone.
We need the hangover. The one day in between.
No, we need 2 days.
Oh, 2 days in between.
2 days after New Year's Eve.
Oh, right.
For there to be any work expected ever. You can't do it. You cannot do it. If we would have had to come in here yesterday and do the show, it would have been the most brain dead thing you've ever heard. First of all, I never would have been able to have the lights on in here, so there'd be no video.
No clips.
It would be from home and. Yeah, some tapes, some best of would make the cut. Hey, guys.
Best of 2022.
I'd be asking poor, overworked Austin to be putting together a best of. No, hey, Austin, just whatever. I don't care. And he would have pitched me a thing. I'd be like, yeah, that's fine. That's cool. I would let you guys do your show.
Oh,
Vapes and Feelings.
Finally.
That's the Vapes and Feelings hour. Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, exactly. You guys could have done it.
That would have been a good
opportunity. You were right there. You're on the doorstep.
We're one day away, Pete.
You're on the doorstep. I was on death's door yesterday. Yeah. Like, there was no clue. Anyway, I also had travel nightmares. None of you left, so none of you can relate. But I'm still a little sour that it's basically summer all of a sudden. It's spring. It's been springtime the entire holiday, except for the days people needed to travel. It almost feels like a conspiracy. I'm starting to wonder, you know? I'm starting to wonder how the hell this happened. It was undrivable for me to get from here to Ottawa. The Kingston corridor was a complete mess. Mm-hmm. Couldn't see family. Couldn't get moving on the 24th. Then I'm supposed to take a train. Two of them get canceled. Something happened with the Via Tracks. Some people got it way worse than me. Hey, like, I count my blessings that I wasn't one of those people that was stuck in a train. I've been stuck in a Via station before, or you get stuck in an airport. That's a nightmare. Being stuck on the actual train, feeling like that level of trapped. Oh, not for this guy. That said, I got stung with a $600 ticket. One way to Ottawa. That's how criminal it is in this country, the airline industry in this country.
It is a
criminal syndicate that runs, well, so many things. Again, like, this country is a place of many, many monopolies. But the airline industry, holy crap. Yeah. The travel industry just in general, not having the options to be able to move around and get around. There was two airlines that flew to Ottawa, and both of them went, yeah, $600. My plane wasn't full. My plane wasn't full. I wanted everyone arrested. I wanted everyone. I was like, every single person from this airline, I want to see on television. Like, remember those 90s movies, those early 2000s, like, detective movies where they finally cracked the case. I wanted Morgan Freeman up there being like, and all, we caught them all. We got them.
Yeah, like, we got them.
They're all under arrest. They're all going to be trotted out in front of you for hijacking you with these prices. Like, this is unacceptable. We got to figure out something else. Oh, it's beyond moon jail. Honestly, it's too good for executions. No, it's just, that's it. It's too good for you. We can't put you in moon jail. We cannot risk you escaping.
Saturn jail.
It's just unreal. It's just unbelievable that we're just so used to this. Every other country you want to move around within that country, it's the easiest thing. Thing ever. It's the cheapest thing ever. Canada, I want to go down the road and people go, and there's no sympathy. People go, did you book last minute? Like, yeah. Like, oh, well then, who cares?
It's your fault.
Who cares?
Your fault.
It should cost you whatever it costs you. Oh, you had to go into your savings account to see your family for Christmas to go on a flight that was an hour? Yeah. No, that makes sense. That's totally fine. Ugh, and then everyone tries to tell you about the, like, weird airlines, the little peripheral ones that don't even fly to the destinations. No. And they're like, well, there is this. If you go here, 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 and you book it 6 months in advance, and they don't cancel it on you, you can do it at a fairly reasonable price. Anyway, I hate traveling in this country, but those 2 days, that was as nightmarish as it got. And look, I love my mom to death, right? But I tried to basically be like, this is too expensive. This is outrageous. I can't pay for this. And then she did the, like, that's fine. We'll miss you. And then,
and you're like, okay, well,
guess
now
what?
I have to.
Yeah. The kid broke out his credit card.
Yeah. Wow. Nice. Yeah, of course.
I'd do the same thing. Cool. I would do the same thing.
Yeah. Well, how could you not?
Yeah.
No.
Well, just, your Instagram stories.
My mom
were very
goes to moon
funny.
Jail for that.
Very funny Instagram stories.
I put my mom in moon jail for like a couple of weeks just for the guilt. Like, she owes me $600.
She owes you $600. Like,
yeah. She at least owes me like $200. No, just kidding. I love you, mom. So yeah, the holiday was pretty good. I don't feel rested, and I just definitely I'm in detox zone. Mm. I can't drink in a meaningful way for a month.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say anything because I'm 22. So I'm just not going to say anything because I'm going to get roasted.
I think I'm sweating out booze right now.
Yeah, I can kind of see it. Yeah.
We both just team up on you immediately.
No, I'm serious. I think it's still just like, this is going to be a while. If I did one of those toxin flushes, I don't think one dose would work. I would need multiple of them.
Oh,
but
no.
Yeah, everything else was good for you guys.
Yep, it was pretty good. I actually felt kind of relaxed, although it's pretty easy for me to just turn my brain off and just not do anything.
Yeah, that's very clear.
Yeah, I watched White Lotus.
Joe turns his brain off. Oh, wow. What a shocking turn of events.
This is news.
Yeah.
I watched White Lotus and the show with Kevin Costner, Yellowstone.
Yeah.
I'm in the process of watching that, but White Lotus was really good. Watched The Whale, like I told you. And then I won some money on the roulette table, Black 22, hit it 3 times over the holidays. Really exciting stuff. So, family. I spent time with family as well. But $360, I think, or 180 times three, whatever that is, 560, something like that.
Dude,
180. Times
once again,
three.
Pete and his math is just.
I have 600 in my account. That's all I know. I have 600 in my account.
That's 540.
Yeah.
540. Thank you, Joe.
Dude,
but yeah,
that,
very
you were only
stuff.
Off by $200.
Yeah,
you are close, Pete. No,
yeah,
just...
well, I hit Black 22 once, and then I hit it twice the other time. So that was the two 180s, 360. Yeah, but
it's a lot of math.
Yeah, math.
First day back.
Yeah.
Come on.
But really exciting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really
no, this
exciting.
Is the first day back issue, right? The math.
Yeah.
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 That's
usually
all
I'm tough of class.
Me and Austin stat just to bring it all together.
Yeah.
Full circle.
No, Austin's again. Austin, I'm worried. I'm concerned. I feel like those. Those like airlines or those travel, those hotels where it's just like a drawer that you pull out and people are sleeping like essentially in a drawer. I think that they're going to need to build that for Austin at the station. He's doing like every single show. They're going to work him into the grave.
Yeah.
That's like on the table right now.
Speaking of travel stories, JD, Christmas Eve, I was here, drove to Southern Ontario. I now no longer believe in wind. Wind isn't a real element. We don't have to worry.
Explain.
Weather advisory. Driving from here to Lincoln, Ontario, right outside of St. Catharines, about an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
Beautiful. The wine place of Ontario. Get all your wines from there.
Okay. Thank you.
No free plugs. There's like, it's windy, you know? Don't drive if you can't avoid travel. Wind, you're in a car. I don't believe in it anymore. It's not a real thing.
Okay. Anti-wind. That's a tough that was a tough blow for wind energy.
Big wind.
The big wind is going to come for you now.
Wind enthusiasts are shaking right now.
Well, I got this was a wild attack at wind. I was waiting to hear what you guys did. I thought maybe one of you would have an interesting story about the holidays or something happened, and it was just like Joe turned off his brain, Boffo left the studio, you hate wind, and Pete watched White Lotus and played Blackjack.
Not that I hate wind. I have no fear of wind.
Yeah, you have no fear of wind. All right, man. That's bold. You're really calling out wind out a little too much. That's a little too much calling out wind. Anyway, okay. So sports. This is a sports show. There's so many things. We got Jeff Merrick. I'm going to talk to him about Connor Bedard in more detail. But I do need to start by just saying, I think there are a few moments where you're allowed to tweet, "Holy bleep." Oh my God, what, you know, WTF, you know, there's mm-hmm. certain, like most of the time those tweets are lame as hell. Really, they are. And you just, but there's no other way to encapsulate what you just saw.
Yeah.
That Connor Bedard game.
Was one of those moments.
That is as awestruck as I have been by a goal in a very long time. Mm-hmm. I don't know what. I'm supposed to even reference that to outside of, again, we get that with McDavid goals in the regular season, but for that kid to do that on that stage in that moment in a packed house during a tournament where it's all been about him, I just, again, I'm at a loss for words at how brilliant it is. There was one guy on the Slovakian team that said, you guys see how he breaks the game. Or how it's like he's a cheat code, or essentially he's like, he's not cheating, but you see what I mean. You know what I'm saying. And I went, yeah, I do know what you're saying. I don't know how you're supposed to defend that guy. I don't know what you're supposed to do against that guy. For him to just not only meet the hype, because I'll admit, when people started talking about Sid and McDavid and he's 17 years old, I'm going, okay, just relax. I'm a big time. Let me just see it. Mm-hmm. And not in junior, because some guys have, not, I know, not like him, but still. To see him do it this way, when you start smashing records, the guys in behind him of Gretzky, Lindros, Jagr,
yeah,
for the points, it's kind of hard not to go, oh, and when there's still time, and that he's just done it this effortlessly, it's hard to ignore that. Yeah. It's really hard to ignore that. And even if you try to contextualize for era and a strength of opponent, whatever, you just see it. Everything meets the eye. He moves in a way that is just different. It's a different kind of pace, a different kind of movement that he's playing with, and it throws defenders off. And again, you saw it on that goal. He's incredible. He's truly, truly unbelievable.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to get into him more with Merrick. I needed to mention it because he's unreal.
He's like always three steps ahead of everyone else. He knows, he sees the play before anybody else. Like, there was the goal where he went across the ice to Gunther in one of their first games where he was looking at the net.
No, he's in.
He was looking at the net and then just right to Gunther, one-timer, goal.
There are just certain times where you have to watch certain players.
Yeah.
Right? You just have to.
Yeah.
And he's having that moment in sports where you have to sell it to a casual fan. You have to try to be telling somebody that they need to be watching something. That's how great he has been at this. I'll be honest. I've kind of fell out of love with the juniors. It's just, it hasn't been the same for me. I've never gotten the thrill of seeing Canada beat the brakes off of Austria, you know, 10 million to nothing, and being in a sports bar where people are like, yeah. I'm like, what are you, their parents? This is awful. This isn't fun. Until they play big games, and now Russia's not in the tournament. They don't play the New Year's Eve game against the United States anymore. It doesn't feel the same, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been a extremely positive cycle for Canada hockey in general. Like, it's just, it's not, it hasn't been the same for a little while. I think it's a tournament that doesn't feel the same way for you as you get older. And they have, but when you get a special player in it, it completely rejuvenates it. It completely reinvigorates it. And that's what we've had with this kid. The DeMar Hamlin thing is the worst thing that you'll see in sports. It's awful. It's terrifying. It's sickening. My phone blew up. I wasn't actually watching the Bills game yet. I had no idea what was going on. I thought people were texting me about just the Canada being tied.
Yeah.
Because everyone was like, did you see that? Did you see this? Or can you believe this? What the hell? And I was going, they're tied.
I had the Canada game on as well. And then my friend like came out of the bathroom and was like, yo, have to turn on the football game.
Yeah. I had that in wraps. And so I was watching those two games, and I'm trying to discern whether or not people are talking about the Raptors blowing it or that happening. But listen, all you can say is apparently he's in stable condition right now. We have Chris Pronger later on the show today, and I'm trying to confirm whether this is like 100% accurate, but he got hit with a slap shot early in his career in St. Louis, and it apparently was the exact same condition. And, like, he fell to the ice. He was on it for a very long time. It's a very scary play. I was surprised that I hadn't seen it before. But, yeah, it's apparently called commotio corditis. Or cordis. That's it, cordis. Anyways, it happened in 1998. I wasn't aware of it until it was started to go around on Twitter today. But, again, by all accounts, he's stable. He's on the breathing machine. I think that the NFL made the right call. I thought it was a little surprising that people were overly critical of the NFL's timing of the cancellation. I actually thought that it was really quick, all things considered. And yeah, I guess all you can do right now is hope that that guy's all right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think to me it was a reminder of just how dangerous these games are. And yeah, if you're a player and you're doing these things, you really are like putting your life on the line. And it's why stuff like Tua Tagovailoa, when he's considering coming back to the football field, sometimes, yeah, you, I don't want to say you need a reminder like that, because you don't. You don't ever want to see that happen. But having a reminder like that, I think, can give everybody some perspective when we think about, you know, athletes playing through injuries or, you know, concussions, whatever the hell it is. Just that, holy crap, this is extremely dangerous. This can be extremely scary. And yeah, those are, I don't like usually when people say like athletes are human beings, I go, I think that's a bridge too far. But just, yeah, that was really, really, really scary and uncomfortable moment. Yeah. But I'm glad that he's okay. And it was unbelievable the outreach that all the NFL community has had in terms of like paying for this guy's or donating to this guy's toy drive.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? 1.1
million? 3.3
million. 3.3?
The original goal was 2,500. And as of this morning, 3.3 million US.
Holy crap. I thought it was like, I went to bet it was 1.3 or something like that.
This average donation of $25.
3.3 million now.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's, yeah. That's really the only word you can use for that. Incredible.
Yeah, I'm going to do quickly on wraps before I do. I'll do football later. We'll do a little bit in time for action. Because I do have some thoughts on some of the other games. But the Raps just stink, okay? This is done. This era of the Raptors is done.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to stop pretending. I've seen so many people try to do Raptors silver linings for way too long. That we need to stop with this. Like, we need to stop pretending like the Raptors are a precious Achiuwa healthy getting away, or, you know, Scotty Barnes is going to find something. No, it's done. It's not happening, okay? The vibes are horrific. You can see it with the team. Man, I went last Thursday watching them sit courtside. Body language is, like, beyond bad on that basketball team. Raptors have always been about culture, culture, culture. And everyone likes to say, oh, Raptors can't tank. Raptors can't tank because it's about culture. And you don't want to have a losing culture. They have a losing culture. In fact, the longer they hang on to this, the worse it's going to get. These guys don't love playing with each other. Like, they don't. There's clearly friction within their group. Scotty Barnes got barely poked in the eye on a play and walked off the floor into the tunnel, then came back during the timeout, bitched out the referee, and then kept playing basketball. It was one of the, like, it was pathetic. I was watching it go, are you serious? You're the vibes guy? You're the heart and soul hustle young guy? Like, the level of entitlement that a play like that takes is beyond me. And that's where they're at right now, where some guys just kind of take nights off. Some guys look pissed off all the time. Fred looks completely in a funk. He looks outraged. And yeah, guess what? Stuff is starting to kind of leak out a little bit on the fringes of maybe he's not happy. And why would he be? He keeps getting hurt, and now he can't perform. And he's had a coach who plays him into the ground. Look what happened yesterday. They get nothing from their bench. Malachi Flynn has flashes where I go, oh, damn, they need to play him more. And then he has moments like last night where you say, this guy can't play 5 minutes.
Yeah.
This guy can't play in the league. He's a good stats guy on a bad team, but then he can't even be that for the Raptors when they need him.
Yeah, they got nothing. Minus 18 last night.
Yeah, they got nothing from their bench. Yeah. But Fred is getting blown by, and he's another night where he's 3 of 15, and this is after an offseason where he's talked about, well, he's going to rest up his injuries and make sure they're okay. So, frankly, man, with Fred, I don't really want to hear it about how you're still playing through something. You can't say that you're resting your injuries, you're taking this downtime, you're making sure that this is happening, but then also coming back and not performing. Like, which one is it? I'm sure that Nurse overplaying you has resulted in some of this, but a lot of guys do play heavy minutes in the NBA, and it usually doesn't fall off a cliff like this before you hit your 30s.
Yeah.
So for Fred, listen, it's becoming very, very clear that the Raptors have to trade Fred VanVleet. Hey, guess what? Old JD was right. Hey, guess what? The guy who said it in the offseason, you know what? It's probably time to move on, Fred, because you can't pay him $100 million. Hey, guess what? Probably wish that it wasn't, hey, you're crazy. They would never do that. Can't wait to get Blake in here next week and just, you know, play all the tape. No, just kidding. I love Blake. No, but for real, what's Fred's trade value now? Like, he might opt into that contract, or he's going to want that kind of money. Like, what are you getting? What are you getting back?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when he's playing defense like that against the Pacers and he can't shoot, he's down at 33% for threes on the season.
Yeah.
What are you getting back? Like, why would a team be reaching out to you and saying, we have to do a deal here, we need to trade something here, for a guy who looks like he's wearing down, a guy who has completely lost his stroke, and, yeah, doesn't play defense at the level that he once did? And yeah, sure, maybe he bounces back and maybe this react. You want to say, oh, you're being reactionary. Raptors, I just said, they had 13 games against teams that are above 500. They're 3-7 so far through the 13 games. They've got a horrible loss to a Kings team that was on a back-to-back. They had a tough out against the Nets. The Warriors had no Stephen Wiggins, L, embarrassing. Yeah. The Sixers loss was actually kind of a tough, decent loss. But again, it was mostly just Siakam, who continues to be pretty much brilliant. And so he can kind of put the team on his back every once in a while and just win them out a game. Then they get a win against the Knicks. That's nice. A win against the Cavs. You're starting to feel like a little bit of momentum is building up. They just own the Cavaliers, though. At this point, I think they're 3-0 against the Cavs already this season. Like, they just put them in their pocket and they dominate them. Anyway, then you get that Clippers awful loss where it's just... it's not happening. Grizzlies, I'm there. I'm in the house. I'm basically courtside. Awful loss. Suns, they beat with nobody on the Suns roster. It was just like Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, a Pacers team that hilariously is built completely differently than the Raptors. They just went out and decided, hey, we're just going to get ballers. These guys are all undersized. They're all guards, and they're going to beat the forward team. And, yeah, they whooped their ass down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not going to lose enough to be one of the worst teams in the NBA. No one needs that to happen. If I was them, though, I'd be really considering trying to sit guys in the upcoming games against Charlotte. Like, there's a back-to-back against Charlotte coming up here that, yeah, they're at that point. But to me, the patience and the waiting, this might have even more of a damaging effect on this team and on guys' values and on whatever. The interesting one is, what the hell do you do with Gary Trent? Because he's just balling out of control. He's out of his mind. And he plays well with Siakam.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those two guys play well together. It was always, hey, you can't trade Fred because what kind of message does that send to Siakam? Now I actually kind of wonder if it's the other way around where you go, hey, the only thing is that can you trust Gary Trent Jr. to get that same kind of contract as Fred VanVleet? Or what can you get in the open market? But at this point, people need to stop deluding themselves. Again, they played 10 teams in the stretch that are all above 500. Some of them are not remarkable. They've won three of those games.
Yeah.
They've won three. And they've been actually set up pretty well throughout this stretch against a bunch of these teams. What is going to change? They can't shoot. They can't play defense. They don't have any depth. They have a coach that overplays the best players on the team, doesn't trust anybody else to make mistakes. And they have a star in Siakam who's so brilliant that he can win you enough games, and they have enough guys around the fringes that when they show up, when Scottie Barnes plays well, you go, oh, okay, I can kind of see it. When OG Anunoby plays well, you go, I can see it. But no, they're playing Christian Coloco at center.
Yeah.
They're bringing Malachi Flynn as their most reliable point guard off the, like, they don't have ball handlers. They don't have shooting. They don't have a center. Project 6-9 is done. Yeah. There are some pieces that you can keep. There are different ways that you can pivot, but everybody needs to stop pretending that there's awesome silver linings here, because there's not. This is now becoming ugly.
Yeah.
And Masai Ujiri is going to have to figure this out, and they're going to have to make a move. And it's not going to be acceptable to just be like, okay, we'll stand pat or just flip one guy. It's like, you're going to have to really examine what they're doing here and how that next step is going to happen moving forward. I just don't know how the Fred part of this fits in when he's playing the way that he's playing and he's hurt and he's got a player option. I'm truly starting to wonder what his value is.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll do big impressions from week 17 and time for action later. But I do want to take a break and I want to talk more about Connor Bedard because, yeah, holy hell. And we said he's breaking the way that the game is played. I wonder if he's going to break the second half of the NHL season. That's next with Jeff Merrick.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
I was told that one time. I don't think this is what
How you doing, buddy? Happy New Year, JD. How you doing, pal?
I was doing pretty good, but then this happened, and it kind of derailed me a little, and now I'm trying to kind of shake it off.
If this thing is the worst thing that happens to us on our day today, we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, I guess that's some pretty good. You know what?
To us today, then our lives are really good.
I have been preaching to the fellas about perspective, and it's something that I've been talking about for, I don't know, the last, 2 months. And yep. So maybe this is a good lesson for me. Okay, so, I wanted to start with you with Winter Classic, but now I'm in kind of ranting about Bedard, sure. And I got to stay with this. I'm terrified of something, Jeff. I'm truly terrified that this kid is going to land on the Sharks, Ducks, or Coyotes. Like, they can't happen. I would rather see those franchises fold than them get Connor Bedard. I'm terrified of it. Like, it absolutely can't happen. They've got to rig it. They've got to figure something out. It's got to be the worst...
Where did,
It's got to be the worst thing that could happen to the league if he lands in one of those three spots.
Where do you want him to go then?
Can I tell you something?
Because right now, Chicago's got the best shot at him.
Yep.
They're real bad.
Yeah, they're real bad, and they're going to get worse because they're going to trade Kane and Taves. Like, at some point, that is going to go down. They got to move those guys. They got to trade those guys. Although, if I was, I don't know, maybe one of them, I'd be looking at it and going, man, if we did get him, we could be good right away because he's that kind of special.
I don't know about right away. But, yeah, they will be better eventually. Yeah. Put it this way. If I'm Seth Jones and I'm locked in long-term and I'm not going anywhere – and they land Connor Bedard, I'm probably saying to myself, maybe this rebuild's not going to be as long as we thought it might be.
Dude, it's just...
That's about it.
There are certain players, right? And McDavid is one of them, clearly, who they change the geometry of the game that they're playing. And I'll admit, I'm not like you who has seen Connor Bedard a ton and Junior and who has seen him coming up. This has been a novel experience for me. He is just that. Like, he is someone who, there was a guy on the Slovakian team I mentioned already who said that, he just breaks the game. I have to be thinking there are even people whose job this is that are looking at what he's doing at the juniors right now and reevaluating what their approach is going to be just to even try and get percentage points higher in the draft moving forward here. Like, are we going to start to see, teams change their approach because of how special the kid at the top of the draft is?
There's a couple, and I want to get to that because I heard you talk about Fantilli there a couple of seconds ago, and I want to have a little conversation about that too if we have time. But, Sam Kinison, the late great comedian, used to always have the line, if you're going to miss heaven, don't miss it by 2 inches. Like, there's a reward for being first, and in situations like this, there's a reward for being last. Like, the worst spot you'd want to be in is a spot that, like, the Vancouver Canucks find themselves in, where you're just playing 500 hockey. You're not good enough to do anything. You're not bad enough to get Berard. If you're going to be bad, be really bad, and this is the year to do it. And there are a lot of teams that are in consideration here, Chicago, Anaheim. I still think Montreal has more losing to do, even though the Philadelphia Flyers have somehow ripped off 3 in a row here. Don't be surprised if Philadelphia is back in that conversation by the end of the season. Columbus, who have been dying for a center seemingly forever, JD, may end up with some lucky lottery help here. I think that, put it this way, I think the teams have learned that you don't recalibrate your expectations or your thoughts on a player just based on a 2-week snapshot, which is essentially what the World Juniors is. Like, scouts will tell you, I know it's high profile, I know it's the biggest event of their career, but don't read too much into what you're going to see for 2 weeks for any of these players, whether it's Connor Bedard, whether it's Leo Carlson, whether it's Adam Fantilli. This is still a 2-week snapshot of a player's career. Having said that, Connor Bedard has distinguished himself. Like, we always look at the draft, JD, and we say, okay, what are the tiers? Like, where are they? Like, where is there a drop-off? And it seems as if there's a couple of tiers that have emerged coming out of this World Junior, tiers that have sort of cemented themselves. One, like, I look at it like this. There is Connor Bedard and then a big drop-off. And then Leo Carlson and then a drop-off. And then you get to Adam Fantilli, Matvei Michkov, etc. That's based on what we've seen so far. And I think what this has done, like, this has done wonders for the marketing of Connor Bedard, because now he's on everybody's radar. Like, now everybody has had, like, to your point, you may not have watched him play with the Regina Pats. Understandable. It's tough, specifically if you're in the East, outside of watching, clips and highlights on YouTube. But now everybody has seen him, and he's part of hockey conversations, and he's part of what-if dynamics, and he's giving, hope to organizations like the Ducks and the Hawks and the Blue Jackets and the Coyotes about what could be if you get some lottery luck here. So more than anything else, this has just sort of put Connor Bedard on the radar for a lot of casual hockey fans. So now they can be part of those conversations. But I don't think that there's anything that Bedard has done in this tournament that's going to change scouts' minds about him. They've known that this guy's going number one for a long time. All this has done is, maybe the best way to put it, JD, is maybe the concrete has hardened a little bit more around the conversation. But that's about it. Like, this guy's been special from the first day he joined the Western Hockey League, and now it's no longer a secret that's kept in the West. Now everybody knows about Connor Bedard.
Okay, so there's a couple things. One is that, I I don't doubt your acumen, especially knowing that their teams haven't, hey, identified this guy as the guy in the draft. Even though I do think it's wild that a couple months ago there were real conversations about whether or not he could slip to number two. I guess, like, kind of looking back, I don't know really how that happened. I don't know if that's just media conversation or how stuff like that, but it was like some credible people that were having conversations like that. But the second part of it is, okay, so even if this is just the marketing of Connor Bedard now, like, he's becoming more of a name, and maybe this doesn't extend as much to the States, like, I don't know, but yeah, all of a sudden, if you are a fan, you got to think that there is a little bit more pressure to go in and to get this kid. And if you're thinking about some of those other markets, you want a shot in the arm. If you're the Philadelphia Flyers and you've been stuck in basically nothing now for what? How long has it been since the Flyers were relevant, right? Like Mike Richards
2010.
Years?
2010.
Yeah, exactly.
Final against Chicago.
It's been over a decade where a real hockey market has felt like they're moving in any kind of meaningful direction. If you're them, you've got to be thinking, this matters, like, this matters the most. Our sport can become relevant based on just this guy's play alone. And that's what scares me about the Coyotes, Ducks, and Sharks, is I just don't think that there's anything that those teams can do that can make them relevant. As good as the Sharks were over all those years, like, the Ducks were relevant when they won that one Stanley Cup because the team was loaded and they had Pronger and Niedermayer, and that was a fun run for them. But I don't think that, like, that's a perfect cocktail for them to have basically a year where people cared about them. And I'm not sure that out-of-market people were watching them or caring about them. For Connor Bedard to have games that start at 10:30 at night at the Honda Arena, just, it's my greatest fear, Jeff. It's like nuclear war.
Okay, so you just want him on a big market team in the East.
Yes, I want to be able to watch this kid.
So everybody can see him. Yeah, no, I get it. Like, I understand. I understand all that. But you know, the NHL has an East and a West. Like, there are two. Like, it's not just, this isn't just like the old, you know, the
West is fine if the Canucks get him.
I don't think they'll be. I think Vancouver's stuck in that mushy, playing 500 hockey middle.
Or the Blackhawks.
Nobody. Well, the Blackhawks are interesting because, you know, this is probably the last hurrah for Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane here. So that could be like the beginning of the next, you know, the rising of the Chicago Blackhawks after the colossal teardown here. Like, I look at who needs a player like this. Well, you know, Anaheim are already loaded with prospects, right? They're already loaded with, you know, young talent. But, you know, Ryan Getzlaf just retired. You know, would Connor, and there's another guy from the Western Hockey League, is this a situation where Connor Bedard steps in and becomes their next Getzlaf? Chicago, they're losing Jonathan Toews. Does Bedard step in and become the new Jonathan Toews? The San Jose Sharks, you know, is this guy going to step in and become like the next Joe Thornton for the San Jose Sharks? Arizona seems like the obvious one. And even though, you know, they've been able to string together some wins here, specifically at Mullet Arena, where they have a really good record. You know, Carl Vemelka has stolen a bunch of games. The team's, you know,
keep winning, baby. Now I'm so happy they beat the Leafs. Thank God. Keep winning. Go Yotes. My favorite team now. My favorite team. Sharks, Coyotes, Ducks. Jeff, that's who I care.
People, just have them win.
That's it. Every time they win, know that I'm at my place, fist pumping, waking up, checking the box score, going, yes, thank you. Keep getting those W's.
And you look at the Philadelphia Flyers, right? Like you mentioned the Flyers. Now, the Flyers are kind of screwing this thing up by winning now.
Yeah.
But we don't know about the future of Sean Couturier. You know, we don't know if this guy's, you know, going to play hockey this season or if he's going to play hockey at all. I mean, back injuries are certainly tricky. I mean, there's a lot of teams. Listen, every team could use someone like Connor Bedard. Like, no one's thinking they're saying, like, yeah, we really can't use a guy like this. Every organization does, obviously. I don't really care where he goes, to be honest with you. Like, listen, man, like, I'm up till the final buzzer every night anyhow.
Yeah, but you're the 1% of the 1%.
No, I know. I'm just talking selfishly here. Like, I get it. Like, if you're in the East and you want to see a ton of Connor Bedard, like, come on, Habs, right? Come on, Habs, grab Connor Bedard here, and then up the gut, all of a sudden, you're looking at, you know, the makings of another epic Montreal Canadiens team. But really, like, I don't really care where he goes. All I know is this guy has distinguished himself. Like, the conversation shouldn't have even been had to begin with, but the conversation is over. Mm-hmm. To me, the only conversation is not even who's number two, but who's going to go number three. Because I think Leo Carlsson of Sweden has sort of really cemented his status as a number two prospect here.
No, listen, we shouldn't be afraid of old takes exposed. And I always say we're allowed to change our opinions in sports. And for some reason, everyone, there's this like being right culture that is really pervasive in professional sports commentary right now that I don't really love, because it's supposed to be a place where it's okay to be wrong because it's not that serious. But yeah, the Bedard-Fantilli conversations that were happening a couple months ago just retroactively look so bad.
You know what it does? It really does cement how difficult it is for an underager to succeed at this tournament. Like, and first of all, if you're wearing a bubble or a cage at this tournament, you're a really good player.
Yeah.
Because generally what happens with the World Juniors is whoever has the best collection of 19-year-olds wins the tournament. And, you know, you look at, you know, the 205, you know, World Juniors, which we always look at and say, well, maybe that was the best, you know, Team Canada junior squad ever.
It was.
And, you know, there's Sidney Crosby in a cage. I think it was, too. I'm with you. Like, you know that you're a player when you're wearing a cage at this tournament, because you probably, you know, you probably shouldn't be there, but you're that good that you forced your way on the team. Team, trust me, teams want to take the best 19-year-olds, period. Coaches love it. They have a little bit more of an understanding, and the kids are more mature, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that Fantilli is on this team speaks remarkably to just how good this kid is.
So I want to ask you about the Winter Classic. You're down there. It looked gorgeous.
It's great. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, I thought the Red Sox thing was a little corny, but it was a good photo shoot. So I won't hate on it too much. I just thought it was fine. It was just, it's an iconic ballpark. Wait, go ahead.
Can I just pause on that for 1 second? Does it not seem to you, and I talked to someone from the NHL about this over the past couple of days and kind of said to me, like, yeah, you're kind of right about this one. Does it not further cement the idea that the NHL, and we'll see it next year, like T-Mobile Park with Seattle and Vegas, that they've figured out that the Winter Classic, from a spectacle point of view, fits better in a baseball stadium than a football stadium?
Oh, yeah, no question.
It kind of gets lost. Baseball stadiums have much more of a distinct personality, and you can do more with them. Mm-hmm. Like, you did, I mean, obviously, listen, you have something like the Green Monster. Like, it's kind of an obvious one, and you can do it. And I know that, you know, Bobby Orr of Veritek may have been a little bit cheesy for some people, but it's fun, and it's a highlight, and let's not overthink this thing.
No.
It just seems to me like where they showed up, and, like, the Pirates, you know, coming off the bus, and here's the old Pittsburgh Pirates, and here's the Boston Red Sox in the old-timey gear. I loved it.
Yeah.
And to me, it sort of cemented the idea that now, and the NHL has got this Winter Classic thing nailed, and they know how to do it. They've done it enough. Like, these things come off great. They're much more comfortable in a baseball stadium, baseball park, like we saw at Fenway, than they are in a giant football stadium.
Jeff, I 100% agree, but I will say two things at this. This goes back to my hatred of the markets in hockey that don't matter and how there's too many teams in this league. The 32 Thoughts podcast should be maybe the 26 Thoughts podcast. It would be a lot better for everybody involved if that was the case, but this is the thing. The Winter Classic can no longer, and it needs to stop doing the irrelevant franchise thing. And the Kraken and Golden Knights is a fine one because it's an expansion. There's still some heat behind Vegas. Now, like, you have a real exciting moment happening with the Kraken. Great, fine, do it. Like, have those two teams play. But if you're going to do that one, have them actually play in a, I guess they're going to play probably, where is it actually? I forget. Is it in Vegas?
What, next year?
No, it can't be.
Yeah, they're doing it.
It's in Seattle.
Nowhere for them to play in Vegas. There's actually nowhere for them to play
in
Vegas.
Yeah, of course.
There's not a venue that works there. So this will be played at T-Mobile Park. So,
okay.
You know, we saw, you know, plenty of, you know, Boston Red Sox and, you know, Green Monster. Get ready for a whole lot of Seattle, ex-Seattle Mariners.
Sure.
And Mariner talk. And I think they should bring in Griffey and Ichiro and go right down the list.
That's it.
So
you're right.
Get ready for that.
You're right. Make it a spectacle, but have it only be really involved with classic teams. I don't ever want to see a Winter Classic with the Columbus Blue Jackets in it. I'm sorry. I don't ever want to see.
That's why they have the Stadium Series. That's why they have it. Like, they do like, you know, second. They do like, you know, secondary.
Which is fine.
I get it. Like, I know you want the big names and the big teams.
Yep.
But let's say that. Hang on, I'm about to scare you now, JD.
No, don't do it.
Let's say Anaheim gets Connor Bedard.
Fold the franchise.
Never plays in the Winter Classic.
No, yeah, fold the franchise. I'm saying, like, fold the Ducks. go to them and just say, hey, you're gone. This is over now. You're done here. Thank you for coming out. There are no more Ducks. It was cool in the 90s. We gave it a shot. It worked out, but you guys can't sell. If you can't sell out playoff games, you can't get Connor Bedard. That should be the rule. Hey, did your organization sell out playoff games? No. You are exempt from the first overall pick. This can't be it. This can't be the, at least let him be, hey, he broke Lindros's record. Let him be new Lindros where he just says, no, I'm not going there. I'm not going to a place where I'm going to be irrelevant. And Jeff, you know how I can summarize this perfectly? Shohei Ohtani is literally doing Babe Ruth stuff. He's doing Babe Ruth stuff.
I know.
Out on the West Coast on an irrelevant Angels team. And you know who watches Shohei Ohtani games? Nobody. Not a soul on earth ever watches Shohei Ohtani games.
But if the Angels would be, you know, if with Ohtani and Trout, if they were a winning team, that would be different.
Sure, but they're not. It's not about, and neither the Ducks.
No, that's the thing. It's not about the market that they're in. It's about the team itself.
I think you
look at the Anaheim Ducks and you say, well, eventually we can see the building blocks. You know, whether it's McTavish or Zebras, Jamie Drysdale, etc. You can Lucas Dostal. Like, you can see what this team is going to be.
I don't see it.
Having a player like Connor Bedard moves that forward. Here's a question I have for you, because the name that I keep coming back to is Peter Forsberg.
Yeah.
Now, he's not as strong as him, but when you see Bedard play,
I love that.
Do you not see Peter Forsberg there? Because I do. Like, is there anyone that he reminds you of?
Jeff, there's sometimes you just say stuff and it clicks for me and I go, oh yeah, that's why, you know, you're you. And that's what you just did, one of those things. Way to go. I haven't heard anybody say that.
Right?
I haven't heard anybody say that, and that's bang on. That's bang freaking on. That's the comparison for that guy. He's littler him.
Yeah, he's Peter Forsberg. Now he's, again, like, he's...
And guess who one of my favorite players ever was?
Peter Forsberg.
Oh, yeah. Like, no question. That's why I'm just, I love watching this kid play hockey. And that's why I don't want to dream of a world where I have to stay up till 10:30 and watch this team that everyone's like, I saw Stewie on the broadcast and I'm going to hammer him about this in person, but where he's like, oh, the Ducks would be great for Connor Bedard because this young team full of young studs. I'm like, I've seen the Ducks play. They stink. They're brutal. And their young guys get like some points. Just like, no, I don't want to see the Michigan team, you know, like that's just in the flip flop arena where nobody cares about hockey.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Elliot and I talked about this. There is a theory going around. Let me know what you think. In that game one where we saw dueling Michigan attempts. There's a conspiracy theory going around that the players had a bet to see who could do the first Michigan in the tournament.
Well,
Do you subscribe to that conspiracy theory?
Who's sourcing this?
This has been going around. Elliot and I heard about this after the day after the first game.
Hey, again, then guess what? I fully believe it because they tried it way too much.
I'm gonna pull one of my favorite Doug McLean lines ever. I'm not saying it's the truth, JD. I'm just saying what I heard.
I love that.
Which is the Doug McLean way of sort of, removing any sort of culpability from saying anything.
Yeah.
Just saying that's what I heard. That has been whispered out there that there was a bet amongst the players who could do the first Michigan.
Don't love that because it scares me. I often, not to sound like an old man, but I do have some fears of internet culture and how you'd rather be the guy that scores the Michigan than a guy that wins a quiet hockey game, right? And so I'm going, that's a little spooky. Don't love that would be floated around a room and there wouldn't be one guy who steps up and says, if you guys do a Michigan tonight, I'm going to,
Dylan Gunther did after.
No, yeah, he was the man. Hey.
We're not going to Michigan our way to a win here.
And Jeff, guess who my second favorite player on the team is now? Like, that guy.
Dylan Gunther?
Yes, because of that quote. I went, I love this kid. I have Chris Pronger on right after you. Guess who his favorite guy is? Dylan Gunther, 100%. Like, that's not a shadow of a doubt.
Coyotes have a good one there, man.
Yeah. Again, we'll never see him play, unfortunately. Like, he'll just,
don't you want to see Connor Bedard and Dylan Gunther on the same team?
I really don't, Jeff. Unless that team in Arizona is moving to Canada, then I don't want to see it.
So, let's do, Clayton Keller on the left, Connor Bedard at center, and Dylan Gunther on the right. How about
that? Don't care. They're going to wear those Arizona Coyotes jerseys?
Soap and warm water feeling. You're getting that soap and warm water feeling.
No.
Oh, yeah, that's so nice.
No, and in front of hockey fans that don't want to be there that are like, it's too hot. Let's go in here. That's why we're in here. No, I refuse. Put him in front of eyeballs that get it. I was saying to our guys on the show, the weird thing about Bedard is, and I love what you said about the cages, but that he's different from McDavid in the sense of, I can sit a casual fan down that's never seen hockey before, and Connor McDavid is going to pop to them, and they're going to go, oh my God, this guy is incredible. Like, yeah, he's so different from the other guys. I think the beauty of Connor Bedard is that, not that you have to be an advanced hockey fan, but that he's somebody that a hockey fan will appreciate more. Like, if you love this game and you've been watching a ton of it, Connor Bedard, the things that he does are just going to make you feel a bit differently than a guy like McDavid, where it's just raw power, skill, like, you know what I mean?
Speed. Everything at top speed. Yeah, the thing about Bedard, too, and this is what makes him frightening, although, listen, like, last time I checked, like, you know, Connor McDavid's filling the net, too.
But yeah, he's pretty good.
He's a very creative player that's able to turn nothing into something, a great puck distributor when he decides he wants to do it. He didn't do it in that first game when he was playing on that line. Centered by Shane Wright, they put him down with Stankoven, and all of a sudden he was distributing the puck and back-checking. He wasn't doing that in the first game either. He's a wonderful puck distributor, obviously great edge work. He's so nice on his feet, and he's a shooting threat. Like, that's where it gets really dangerous. Like, when your most creative playmaker is also a shooting threat, it's really hard as a defender to cheat. Like,
yeah.
You look at that last goal. Right, like, look at the stick positioning on the defenseman that he burns.
Yeah, no,
it's like just awful. But he's concerned about getting beat to the outside. But then you realize, well, you're right close to the net. Why wouldn't you defend the inside? But it's Bedard with a quick little fake that makes him cheat to the outside, and then Bedard's through.
I'm completely
the thing about McDavid and Bedard, where there's commonality, is everything they do. It's not that they do things quickly; they do things suddenly.
Yeah.
And that's the exciting thing about Bedard. Like, you're going to hear this and you're going to say this a lot. Suddenly Bedard, like, you get ready to say that a lot for the next 15 years, because that's how this guy's play. This guy plays suddenly, just like McDavid does.
That's the perfect way to close it. That's it. Suddenly. That's perfect. Again, three real bangers from you today. Three real banger lines. Jeff Merrick, thanks so much for making time, buddy. We got to run.
I've used up all my good takes. Only the bad takes coming up in a couple hours at noon here on my own.
No, I think that it's going to be pretty damn good. It's going to be just fine. I think you're going to be able to get into the entire stuff of you being down in the Winter Classic. I wish we had more time. We have Chris Pronger literally right now. So, yeah, we got
more important than me. Talk about the last relevant Philadelphia Flyers team, his 2010. And
that's true.
Where the pucks are that he stole.
The pucks that he stole?
Don't you remember he was stealing pucks at the end of every game?
No.
In that Chicago series? Ask him, where did the pucks go that you took in 2010? I bet you get a good answer.
Yeah, I don't remember that. All right. Thanks for that one. See you, Jeff. I'll ask him.
All right, man.
See you, buddy. Jeff Merrick, 32 Thoughts. Jeff Merrick Show later on today. We'll do a very, very quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk to Chris Pronger next. All right, one of my favorites ever. Hockey Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup champion, 2-time gold medalist. Now my favorite guy to watch on Sportsnet. When he comes on, he just delivers completely just unfiltered commentary. Absolutely love it. It's Chris Pronger. What's up, buddy? How we doing?
How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. So yeah, I actually gonna start with that. I always complain about how there's not enough unafraid commentary in hockey. And I gotta tell you, you've been really doing that with your BetMGM hits with Sportsnet.
That's because I don't care.
But it's awesome, dude. This is why I'm so. We've been trying to get you on for it's got to be about a month now, and you've been busy. You've been doing a ton of stuff. You're Chris Pronger. Makes sense. But I actually think that you need to do more media. You genuinely you've got a real thing, dude.
There's only so much time in a day.
Yeah, but figure it out, because yeah, you're right. You don't care, and there are far too many people that talk about the sport that really are afraid of either offending other players or offending a certain person. And one of my big complaints about hockey is that a lot of times it's a sport of wanting to fit in, right? You want to fit in. And a lot of times with other sports, with the commentary, it's like you want to really stand out. And yeah, some of this has stood out, whether it's been the way that you talked about guys that were trying the Michigans. I can only imagine what you thought watching that first junior game, especially since Jeff Merrick just informed me that there might have been bets amongst the players in the room as to who could score the first Michigan. What do you think the conversation
would... That's always good to hear.
Yeah, but I was going to say...
By the way, what is the leadership group doing in the locker room if that's happening?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. What would you have said in that room if they were like, hey, let's make a bet? I was like, I would have guessed it would have been something like, I'll make a bet with you that I will...
I'll make
I'll
bet with you next practice. I'll make a bet with you next practice that I break your arm. And then you don't get to do the Michigan.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, God. See, so good. So good. And, I think there was a great conversation about hitting. And this is something that I've been wanting to talk to you about for a while, which is, so everyone loves to talk about the skill of the game, and it is improving, and the speed of the game is going up. But to me, losing some of the physicality in hockey is actually making it sometimes a less enjoyable watch to me. It does feel like it's becoming, just a little bit more predictable in terms of the player that the league is trying to go after. And I'm just curious, like, what you think about the game right now. Like, is the game better now than when you left it?
It's a very friendly league. Let's put it that way. I would say from a skill perspective, certainly these kids are,
no doubt.
I mean, they can stick handle in a phone booth. Every one of them's got a shooting coach, a skating coach, a stick handling coach, a nutritionist, a trainer. I mean, the coaches are making out like bandits, but at the end of the day, I want to see passion. I want to see energy and excitement. And, you know, what are the two things people stand up for? Well, three things that people stand up for during a hockey game: a goal, mm-hmm. a fight, and a big hit. Mm-hmm. Two of those three things are physical. And one might argue that all three are physical, because a lot of times scoring a goal means you got to go into the trenches in front of the net, and occasionally you may get hit there. So you might argue that all three involve some form of physical play. So, I'd love to see a little vitriol back in the game, a little anger. It's hard to do for 82 games and then playoffs and whatnot. And I'm not advocating that these players can do that for that length of time. But you see a lot of rivalry games, and they're very ho-hum. Mm-hmm. Usually rivalry games, the game after a rivalry game would be kind of a ho-hummer because the emotions were so high for the previous game, and it's a little bit of a letdown. And, you know, you can go into all those different things. But, I think you, especially when you sit up higher in the press box and things like that, you can see the game just evolving sometimes. Like, guys, you're skating all the way there. Why not finish your check? Mm-hmm. Why not separate the man from the puck? Why not? Everything now is just involved with a good stick. And that works until it doesn't work. And we get into a 7-game series and you get wore down and you get grinded on a little bit. And we see the teams that tend to win the Stanley Cup be talented and highly skilled, yet aggressive, physical, tough. And let's use the Tampa Bay Lightning as an example. Mm-hmm. They were an incredibly tough team. Hard on the puck. Hard to knock off the puck. I'm not saying go and run over guys, but you got to be hard on the puck. You have to win your one-on-one battles and loose puck battles and all those. That's playing hard-nosed hockey. Not fighting, not running a guy through the boards, but being hard on pucks and being physically engaged in the game.
Yeah, I don't think that, like, again, there are certain parts of the game that have changed in terms of, yeah, a certain level of skill players that were just there to fight that I've been like, oh, yeah, that's great. I do love it when there's still a fight. I just do, especially if it's genuine, it's real because of some of the points that you just made, right? I love just seeing passion. Yeah. I love seeing guys that care. And to me, it's like, if you're going to drop the mitts, then you care. You care about what's happening, and you're trying to change the game and show everyone the emotion in that moment. And I love that. I love a big hit. And you're right. There's so many plays where it's just flybys now. And it is a regular season, and there's so much money, and guys are trying to treat their bodies a little bit differently. I think that we overreacted to the big hit conversation, right, with, like, the Trouba stuff, where everyone went...
Oh, did we ever?
Yeah, but I think we overreacted from two standpoints. One was the whole thing about, hey, some of these hits getting too... Is the game too fast for some hits? And I went, what are we talking about? What are we going to do? Like, what do you want to change?
Have him get his... All he has to do is get his head up.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get hit.
Of course.
That's
and
it.
But
do what has been a time-honored tradition.
100%.
Play with your head up. Play with your head up.
100%. And I just thought, like, the bigger conversation there is that because there's so, like, many or so fewer players like Trouba now that you don't have to look up as often. And maybe that should actually be the thing, is like, hey, actually just pay attention. But the other overreaction was, hey, that guys always, like, all throughout the history of the game, if there's a huge hit, guys usually grab each other. Like, there's usually a fight afterwards. I think that that's kind of a totally normal thing. But because the game is becoming less physical.
Yeah, but it's become more normal, which I don't like.
You don't like it.
If it's a dirty hit, yes. Guy gets run from behind. Guy gets, sideswiped, whatever. Boom, fight, protect your teammate. when a guy is skating with his head down and he gets smoked, when early in my career, it was like, hey, get your head up, kid. You got to skate with your head up.
Yeah.
It wasn't, oh, my God, don't hit my player. Yes, you might have a conversation with a guy at the next faceoff or what have you. But if you were to fight every single time there was a big hit, there'd be 50 fights in a game.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like that. I don't think that's it takes the emotion and the energy out of the game, I think.
Yeah.
Because now, and I think part of it, players don't want to hit because they don't want to have to fight every time they hit somebody.
Yeah, I wish we didn't see it as often, too. I just think, like, when a guy actually gets sprawled out, there's probably just a natural inclination, right, for teammates to just grab somebody and go, holy crap, like, someone is down on the ice. Like, we're going to grab you. We're going to slow the game down, and then maybe it is going to become physical. But, yeah, just to your point earlier about, hey, this is the way that the game is changing. You're right. That the heavier teams have still had a lot of success come playoff time, and we've just – I don't know how many times we need to learn this as hockey fans, and especially in this market, is, hey, it's one team for a regular season and one team in the playoffs, right? But
yeah.
Do you think that a team like the Leafs, where they're not a physical team, right? And they're winning puck battles more. They're playing more hard-nosed hockey this season, especially defensively. And, you know, maybe you want to comment on that too. But that a group like that, that isn't as heavy, that doesn't have that same kind of, forecheck, that same kind of heavy hitting style, that same type of, like, tough defensemen that are in kind of in the ilk that you were, that you can, year over year, it's going to be maybe not as difficult for teams like that to win, that this is actually the formula, is taking the regular season team into the playoffs is going to start to have more success.
Well, I would say one thing about the Leafs is that they're doing a much better job really focusing on how they defend. And again, I go back to it. It doesn't matter if you're hammering guys into the boards or big open ice hits. That's not tough, hard-nosed hockey. Tough, hard-nosed hockey is winning puck battles. If you're engaged, if you're physically engaging with your opponent to separate him from the puck and win those battles and come out of the corner or come out of the defensive end and get clean transition game going and things of that nature, that's winning hockey. And I'm not sure if they can do that or not. Because the other thing is, when you play run-and-gun hockey, you have the puck a lot, which does what? It allows the other team to hit you. And what teams are going to do, especially first, you know, they haven't got out of the first round, but if you get into the second, third round, teams are going to continue to grind on you, wear you down. We've seen that they've been susceptible to injury. And then that shortens your bench. They've got a weird cap structure, so they don't have the same depth that other teams have, and then it snowballs and can really affect the outcome of your team.
Do you think that it is going to be a little different this year, though, based on what you've seen from them defensively? Like, do you think that what they're doing right now in the regular season is going to translate?
I can tell you this right now. Nothing is going to matter. Nothing. Until they get into the playoffs. It doesn't matter how they play this year. Until they get into the playoffs and get started and get rolling and we see what they are. The regular season is completely different than the playoffs, period.
Mm-hmm.
Hard stop. It doesn't matter, especially with the scars that these guys have. They haven't gotten out of the first round. So, you know, they could roll through the regular season and play great and play really well defensively, and the goalies could be awesome. And until they get into the playoffs and they feel that pressure and everything starts ramping up within the city, within the media, within the NHL community, you're not going to know anything. So it really doesn't matter. You know, they need to make the playoffs and they need to kind of go through everything. But once they get into the playoffs and everything starts and the puck drops for game one, you're not going to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're not going to know. They're not going to know how they're going to react. You know, they know what defeat looks like. They know what disappointment looks like.
Yeah, that's
they don't know what success looks like yet.
Oof, that's the part that always, I think, scares a lot of people, is you can look at a product and people try to say stuff like, hey, you don't have the mental demons or the ghosts, but it's like, what happens when you're up against it and you look around the room and you see all the same faces that have been there only through disappointment? That has always been the thing to me of how do they ever elevate above that, and will that change?
To that point, though, yeah. I will say, you know, we always hear people talk about it, and I'm a proponent of, you know, winning and learning, but you got to win a little bit to learn.
Yeah.
Like, you have to get past the first round.
Yeah.
You know, like, guys, oh, we lost in the conference finals, and next year we're building towards. That's fine. but you got to win something. You can't just keep kind of humming along and losing in the first round.
Absolutely.
That's not success to me. That's not a building. That's not getting better. That's not learning. It's learning how to lose.
Yeah. You're killing my boy Pete that's sitting across from me right now, because he's just he's the King Leaf fan that just always says it doesn't matter, just like the regular season is, you got to keep the success. It's just like, okay, yeah, that was just keep doing
keep
the
success. Keep it up, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Get that drop. Anyway,
keep telling yourself that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I know he's a younger guy. Were you ever almost a Leaf? Because in 06, there was always a lot of smoke about a trade that got nixed last minute that could have involved you coming here.
Yeah, I don't know. There's always vicious rumors. I could have been all kinds of different places. Who knows?
But you never heard the one about Steen for you?
I don't know.
That sounds kind of like you do know.
There's all kinds of stuff. I don't know.
Would you have wanted to come here? It's weird because I was looking back at that Leafs team and they were sixth in goals for that year, but they were 25th out of 30 teams at the time in goals against. And I feel like, yeah, you probably would have knocked that number down.
I can't remember who was the coach. Was Pat Quinn still the coach, or who was the coach?
No, that was Paul Maurice.
Paul Maurice, okay.
Yeah. No, they finished 40-31-11, and that was like a Ray Kroft year. They got no goaltending. The blue line was in not the best of shape. But the rumor was that the Oilers wanted Alex Steen back, and Toronto viewed him as the future captain and didn't want to put him in the deal. That wasn't something that you had ever gotten floated your way? Like, hey, would you want to go to Toronto?
Oh, listen, there's rumors of Toronto, Boston, L.A. Mm-hmm. I mean, just take your pick.
You had just been, though, in a red-hot, you had just been in a red-hot Canadian market. Would have even interested you to play here? Like, did you ever consider, like, an Ontario return for Chris Pronger to play out some of his career?
I hadn't really thought about that. Mm-hmm. I was obviously exiting Edmonton, so I hadn't really... It was more just conversations with my agent and obviously, Kevin Lowe and who they were talking to and trying to figure out options. And obviously they're going to go with who they get the best deal from.
Because I will tell
you don't exactly have a say. I mean, you do, but you don't, because they're going to take the best deal they can get.
Right. I guess, though, that
and
you would
really
have.
It's really a matter of telling the other teams, hey, you better up your offer because they're taking a different one.
Yeah. I would have thought that you would have had a little bit more of a say, given that, you were Chris Pronger and that you were showing up in a spot where you were just like, hey, am I going to be happy version of me or a pissed off version of me? Like, that's going to be one of the conversations you're going to have as an organization. Anyways, it obviously worked out for you. You end up winning a cup like immediately after. So maybe that doesn't happen in a place where, again, they've had a very difficult time getting out of the first round. Either way, that's always.
No. No insult intended, right?
No, but it's just like, yeah, it was okay. Yeah, I don't think that you, if you even were given the choice, would ever regret the decision. Okay, so this is one then for the Ducks part of you. Is it good for the game if Connor Bedard lands with the Ducks?
I personally don't like teams tanking, per se, and whether they are tanking or not, I don't know. There's a few teams that I think are trying to get Connor Bedard. It's no different than Sidney Crosby's year, and it went between Anaheim and Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
What would have happened with Sidney Crosby if he went to Anaheim versus Pittsburgh?
I don't think it would have been as good for the game. I really don't. I think that Pittsburgh is just like a much bigger hockey market, and yeah, you get to watch more teams on the East Coast watch hockey. It just, yeah, like... It's hard. I was referencing it earlier. Like in baseball, we have Shohei Ohtani, who can throw and hit. He's a truly generational talent. And the team, partially because they don't win and they don't end up in the playoffs, it's a big part of it. But yeah, and it's like people don't stay up until 10:30 at night on the East Coast to watch a lot of players. You can kind of become invisible until postseason time.
So what you're telling me is there's an East Coast bias.
Oh, definitely.
So all my career, I've known all along there's an East Coast bias.
Yes.
Now you're confirming it.
What do you mean? Of course there's an East Coast bias. You think that's some kind of secret conspiracy? No. Yeah, we're all in bed. You guys are playing and everybody's half asleep. You know, and some people are going like, please, God, no overtime. Like, that's it. Of course there's an East Coast bias. Of course you suffered from that. There's no doubt about any of those things. I think, too, that in markets like those ones, if you have a team that is red hot like yours, where just, you know, the your Ducks teams, like, go look at that team top to bottom. It's incredible. Of course you got some market buy-in during a successful run, but when things aren't that way, I just, yeah, it can fall off very, very quickly. And so
No question.
I'm just kind of hoping that he does end up in an East Coast market. And if it is a West Coast one, that it's like the fake West Coast where it's Chicago, right? Where, hey, go to, yeah, it's go to the middle, well, you know, just an hour.
There's a few teams that are, you know, what if he goes to Columbus?
Yeah, I don't want that either. My nightmare list, if I have four teams, it's a nightmare. Arizona's number one. I can't see him there. Ducks are close number two. It's actually kind of flip-flops.
Well, how about this one? How about this
San
one?
Jose.
If he goes, how about this one? He goes to Arizona.
Yeah.
And 1 year later, Matthew signs there.
Well, don't, why are you coming on here to say those things? No, you know what? Here's the thing.
I think that
Matthews cares too much about actually being seen, and he knows that if he was in Arizona, he would show back up there and he would say, the prodigal son has returned, and everyone in Arizona would say, sorry, who are you? So
he can visit there in the summer.
Yeah, he'll be fine. He'll be absolutely
It's a dry
fine.
Heat.
Yeah,
he's
got a nice house there. He spent some good time in the summer. Well, I guess I'm a little happier knowing that, yeah, there wasn't anything where you were like, yep, I was ready. I had my bags packed to Toronto and it didn't happen. So anyway, that was a little bit better. Anyway, Chris, again, I really do enjoy the hits, man. I hope that you continue to do more media. And yeah, because there's very few guys with the resume and the willingness to speak on some of the stuff that isn't working in the game. I appreciate you coming on today, man. This was great.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
Take care, man. Chris Pronger, Hockey Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup champion. And yeah, I think that's a part of it, is a lot of hockey is if you made your multi-millions, you don't want to say anything bad about, right? Like anybody in the game, or you don't want to trash talk the game that gave you so much. That's always a part of it. But then there's also a reluctance to criticize players that were better than you in the game, right? Because the people knock you down by saying, well, who are you to say this when X happened, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's Chris Pronger. He's genuinely, in my lifetime, most feared defenseman that played. And then he just won. He, like, find the hole in the resume in terms of who he was as a player. And, yeah, so, poof. I forgot to ask him about the injury, but that's my bad. Anyway, I highly recommend seeing his stuff because it's usually pretty damn good. And I understand that a lot of people be looking at it, and especially even for you guys going, oh, the whole back in my day talk. It's not about that. It genuinely is. Hockey to me is a sport that needs to be physical. And if it starts to be a sport that leans purely on skill, and not that it'll ever be purely, I guess I shouldn't speak in such extremes.
Mm-hmm.
But the further it gets away from that and you try to compete with just kind of pure skill sports or more skill sports, it's hard to get people to relate to it because there's not as many people who play it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for a lot of people to just even see where the puck is or to understand it or to grasp it. Not everybody, most of the world, especially if you're caught talking about other markets, they don't skate.
Yeah.
You can relate to shooting a basketball. I've said this before. Everybody has shot a basketball essentially in their life. Everybody has kicked a soccer ball.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has run a race. Most people have caught a football or tried to throw one, even if successfully, unsuccessfully. Not everybody has, like, far fewer have skated. Mm-hmm. Far fewer have shot a hockey puck or tried to stick handle one or played in a hockey game versus just a pickup game of all of those other sports in North America.
And if you try and, like, compare the personalities of hockey players,
that's it.
Like the personalities in an NBA or something.
Yeah, you can't do it. You need to have the physical play. You need to have big hits. You need to have the odd fight. You need to have the passion. The difference with hockey that's been so great over the last, I don't know, my lifetime anyways, of watching the sport and how it's kind of differentiated itself from some of the NBA specifically. Because I think that's one where it gets directly compared to it because they're across from one another, they're both 82 games, whatever, is that hockey's always been a sport of, man, you'll just do anything to try to win.
Mm-hmm.
And you will have to test yourself physically to a completely different level because of that physicality. And the further you get away from that, I'm sorry to reference it, but the closer you get to something where it's, hey, let's all be the ones who try to score the Michigan goal first. Okay, that's really fun to see if it happens organically, and it was good when Trevor Zegras did it, right? And it was a good moment for the game, but trying to kind of chase those just pure skill at the expense of, you know, the blood and guts of it stuff, I don't think is good for the game. And that's why when I still reference the when Frank Saravelli came on here and we talked about the Board of Governors and how the game has been a better place than it's ever been, I don't necessarily believe that. I do think that there are too many teams. There are too many players that right now are playing the game the same way. The cap system has definitely taken out guys with certain skill sets. And it's definitely taken out some older players, which is okay. Like, that's all leagues. Every sport is getting younger. But for hockey, the turnover being a little bit higher makes it tougher to kind of connect with other lines on great teams and for teams to stick together. And it's why, like, you remember teams like Chris is that one that had, you know, four lines rolling and multiple defense pairings, and it's harder to do that now.
Yeah. In your ideal world, how many teams would the NHL have? 26?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. I just think that there are too many California teams. I don't think Arizona is working, and there are also too many Florida teams.
Yeah. Watching Arizona games is bizarre at Mullet Arena. Like when the Leafs were there, over the break, and I was watching, and I was texting some of my boys about it. I'm like, this looks like I'm watching like a junior game. Like I'm watching a college game.
Listen, I have a guy that's like, I'm looking at my mentions right now. I'm just like, I have it up. I keep it during the show, you know, at JD Bunkus. And I have one guy who's in here where he's like, oh, the Marcus don't matter shtick is maddening. It's like, why is it maddening and wrong? Who really cares about the Anaheim Ducks? Like, are you seriously watching Ducks games at 10:30 at night? Did you even watch them when they were good? I'm telling you, like, this isn't a matter. This isn't even just East Coast bias. Like, that's clearly a part of it, right? Is that your East Coast, you're going to watch more East Coast games. Your West Coast, you're more likely to watch. You think people on the West Coast are watching the Ducks? You think people in Vancouver, you think that people in Edmonton, like, do you really believe that they want to see the Ducks? And if they get Bedard, more people will want to watch them, but we will still miss a lot of his career. And it will not feel like it matters as much. Do you guys really think that Anaheim winning a Stanley Cup matters the same way that it does in over 20 of the other markets? No. Come on, let's be real. But they don't sell out playoff games at Honda Arena. They've had really good teams. They don't do it. It's not a hockey market. Anaheim is not a hockey market. San Jose can get hot crowds. I think that the LA Kings, it's a big enough populace where they do have a real fan base and a big enough fan base, and it goes back far enough. Mm-hmm. But the Sharks do not. I've been to many Sharks games. I had family members that had season's tickets there. They can have a hot arena. It's not... Anaheim isn't even that.
Anaheim isn't even those two spots. If you went there, how many people would remember that they won a cup? Like, if you asked people on the street?
I don't think very many, man.
Yeah. Like if you just asked, like, if you just took, like, 100 people from the area, be like, do you remember what happened in 2007?
Just telling you, it doesn't resonate. It doesn't hit the same way. And it's fine that the game is trying to grow and it's okay to have those markets and blah, 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 blah. I get it why they do it and they're going to probably just continue to expand. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's not it to have the game's greatest players in those irrelevant markets. It's just, it's not good. He's like, that's what Chris, when he said that, had Sid gone to Anaheim instead of Pittsburgh, think about how different the league is. We don't have Ovechkin Crosby year over year. Mm. What do we have? Watching Sidney Crosby late at night, trying to see if he could beat Joe Thornton. Like, that's not the same. We had two. It's just having those East Coast where hockey matters more rivalry. And it does. Hockey matters more on the East Coast. More people play it. More people relate to it. Yeah. I don't know why we have to pretend like it's not true. Yeah, there's a reason why people in Florida don't care as much about hockey. Tampa Bay Lightning fans continue to be there because they keep winning. So they go, yeah, it's awesome. We go to these games, we win cups. We win the Stanley Cup every year. Of course, it's easy to root for a team that's winning. It's about the markets that care regardless of it. And that's why I would rather see him go to Philly. I'd rather see him go somewhere that, yeah.
I want to see him in Chicago. I think out of all the teams, that'd be my number one.
Chicago would be great.
I would love for him to be
in
Chicago.
It feels a little wrong because they did just win cups, and when you're from a market like Toronto, you kind of want someone to suffer for a little bit. You go, you can't just go from having those Kane Taves teams to Connor Bedard. Can't have just a couple of years of being bad and then get Bedard. But
in the end, I wouldn't want him to go to Montreal.
No, I'd rather see him there.
Well, I'll say that Austin Matthews probably wouldn't be playing hockey if it weren't for the Arizona Coyotes. Yeah. And he'd be playing baseball instead or something.
Who cares?
That. It's like, we're growing the game long term, you know?
Who's we?
Well, like hockey fans, I guess.
Sure. You can point to those examples, but you could also say, hey, maybe if you had a concentration in a different market that the Austin Matthews would have come from somewhere else.
Like, that's true.
I don't buy it as much. I really don't. Yeah, the Arizona thing, having hockey be present there, and the idea that you're hoping to get one player out of one place every once in a while, I don't want Connor Bedard there. Anyway, I don't think it's good for the game. Quick, it's time for action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in the action. Must be 19 plus. Must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. I'll try to mix in some more football throughout the week. We just didn't get it in. This just first holiday show back. Yeah. We're getting crammed. But this is fishy line day. The fishy line to me is very clear. It's the Steelers only being -2.5 at home against the Browns. It's the Mike Tomlin trying to complete the being over 500 streak. The team obviously cares. They've got something to play for and win. And I don't know what the Browns are playing for here. And yeah, they just had a nice win, but I haven't seen anything from Watson that indicates that he's going to look all that different from what you saw from Huntley. Like, how have they been all that different as players so far? So, yeah, I'm a little nervous about that one. I'm a little nervous about Browns-Steelers, if I'm a Steelers fan, just seeing that line, because it doesn't compute with me. Mm-hmm. That's the fishy line of the week. Is there anyone that stands out to anybody else, quick?
The other one that stood out to me was Cowboys only being -4 over the Commanders, because they're still potentially playing for the one seed, even though it may not matter, because it depends on what Philadelphia does.
But that's the thing.
And the Commanders are like they're dead. They're dead.
They're definitely dead, and I think the Cowboys would still beat them with Cooper Rush, but
-4 just seems a little too small to me. Yeah, just personally.
Yeah, but the Eagles are going to play a Giants team that sits everybody because they have to play for absolutely nothing.
Yep.
And the Eagles are just too talented. They're going to beat a Giants team that sits everybody that doesn't play dimes. And so, if you're the Cowboys, you know that what you do is kind of irrelevant.
I don't know. When I saw that, I was like -4. A little small.
Yeah.
I would have expected something closer to like 6.5.
This week sucks in terms of trying to find good teaser legs.
Yeah.
they were like, yeah, we're not messing around with the teams that are decent and playing for like -14 for the Niners and for the Eagles.
Yeah. Over the Cardinals and the Giants.
I'm pretty pissed that the Seahawks game is before the Lions Packers game. I think that's pretty unfair that those are at different times, but
that should be at the same time.
Yeah, I know.
All things considered.
But I get it because it's a huge game for the Lions. And I'm actually happy for Lions fans that they have this. But boy, Seattle finds a way to lose. Or Seattle wins that game. Is Detroit? I don't know.
If Seattle wins, Detroit
is done.
Seattle
wins, Detroit is done. And the Packers need to win.
Yeah.
So it just kind of changes the complexion of that game pretty quickly.
I'd almost rather have the Seahawks lose than have a winner.
Same.
Win and you're in.
Yeah, I would.
That would just be so much more entertaining. Lions, Packers, come on.
I've gone so back and forth on the Seahawks season so many times of do I want them to... I wanted them to lose this week. I think that this was the worst case scenario. I wanted them to lose. I wanted them to fall below the Jets. I was dreaming of potentially 2 top 10 picks and how badly this team needed it and the added flexibility that was going to give them. And now you just have to be all in on rooting for a playoff spot.
Yeah. Alabama QB Bryce Young declaring for the NFL draft.
Yeah, Seahawks won't get him. He's going to go too early.
Texans have a 55% chance of getting the number one overall pick.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you too. I never really wanted Bryce Young.
Oh,
he's
really?
A gamer and I respect him as a player, but I already did the short quarterback thing and I just want something different. I actually really like Stroud and he had an awesome game. Mm-hmm. He had some real moments. The college football. Did you guys watch the game up until drop?
I have not been invested in college football this season, but I watched those games and I was like, this is peak entertainment. This is like, seeing TCU and against Georgia in a national championship is so dope to me.
Yeah, well, I hate it. That sucks. What are you talking about?
I love it.
It's a 16-point spread. What are you talking about? How can you love it?
TCU's covering that.
Okay, sure. Whatever.
TCU's
who cares?
Covering
the playoffs are done.
TCU guy was
the playoffs are done.
I just don't want to see. I'm happy to see someone other than Alabama.
This is the take of a child. This is the take of a child. This is you going Marcus Edelman.
Oh, TCU.
And then it's going to be over in the first quarter. It's going to be Georgia up 4-2.
I'm all the way on TCU.
And you're going to go, wow, so great that TCU is there. No, it obviously would have been the best if it was Michigan and Ohio State in the final. Like, there's just like, that's not even a debate. That's not even something I'll entertain. Unless you're a Georgia fan or a TCU fan, you're not allowed to have any other take.
I'm also just a hater. I like seeing different things.
Yeah, until it's over in a quarter. Yeah, that's very...
CJ Stroud did win me over, though. I think
he won me over too.
As the first overall pick over Bryce Young. I wasn't there all season, but after that game...
I don't think you can do that.
I don't think so. You still would prefer Bryce?
No, but I was joking the entire time I was watching it with friends that this is, I needed him to have drives to win me over so that I was really rooting for him to be the pick.
Exactly.
And he kind of did. He kind of got there. I wouldn't hate it. Anyway, quick break. That was Time for Action brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in the action. Must be 19 plus, must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. Quick break, then we'll come back and close this out with what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, the best.
Okay, so we were off for over a week of shows. We were off for 2 weeks of shows? How many days were we off?
We were off for just over a week. It was like we missed the Friday and then the Monday and then the week in between.
Okay.
So it was like what?
That's what it feels like.
11 days? 10 days? 11 days?
Boy, you guys and the math.
Yeah, it's a...
How many shows did we miss?
If that's it's seven. Five, that's seven.
Yeah, there you go. That's it. We missed 7 shows.
Yes.
We missed a week's worth of shows.
I got 16. How did you get
16? Honestly, Pete, I just don't even want you to talk about it. You're such a disappointment.
Got 16.
All of your math teachers. Like any math teacher that has ever come across you.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you double it, it's not good.
Honest to God, if you were a superintendent of a high school that was your math teacher and they heard you on radio do your math from time to time, I actually think the superintendent has to call and check in. He has to go sit in on the class. He or she needs to go sit in on that math teacher's class and go, what's happening here? So Pete Walker graduated from your class. What'd you do?
I should laugh, but yeah, no.
You didn't graduate. That makes more sense.
Oh, yeah, no, I graduated.
You just left.
Okay.
You just walked out.
You got remedial math.
Yeah, no, it was not a great math experience.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a shocking revelation by you as you try to add up what amounts to 7 and you get 16. Anyway. My God, yeah. Guess what, guys? I was very good at math. Oh, really? Yeah, it's not a language. You don't forget it. You don't forget addition. Anyway, that's quite a thing. Anyway, let's do some things that we missed over the break.
What did we miss? Christmas break edition, JD. Yeah. Prior to signing off, you said, or your wish list item, I believe, was a splash.
Mm-hmm.
Your team making a splash. Well, Dalton Varsho became a Toronto Blue Jay while we were off
right
the
after.
Air. So how does that, is this qualify as a splash to you?
Well, I didn't really miss it because I went on Fan Drive with Ennis and Blake that night.
Right.
I said, hey, have me on because I'm off. I actually texted Ben. I asked him. I said, please have me on. He didn't ask me. And then he said, yeah, of course. But I went on. We talked about it. I've had some time. Still don't love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's a fine trade. It is a fine trade. But generally, when you see a prospect, there are people who have different views on Moreno, which I always kind of find strange given that everything that we've really seen of him is pretty awesome. He's got awesome bat to ball. He seems like an incredible competitor. He plays a couple positions, and one of them is extremely coveted around the game. It's pretty good to have an awesome catcher. No matter what, he is the Jays. He's their top prospect. Like, he's universally their top prospect around baseball. You can be someone who, for whatever weird reason, thinks Ricky Tiedemann is higher than him. Whatever. I don't really care. He is the consensus top guy. Generally, when you see guys of that caliber go, we talked about it with Kylie McDaniel. It's very rare. It's very hard to pry those guys away from organizations. And they're usually involved in splashier trades than Dalton Varsho. So I like Varsho, and I tweeted this at the time. You can be excited about him as a player. People always want you to pick a side and be so aggressive and have zero nuance with a sports take. I think that Varsho looks great. He can obviously play defense as good as just about anybody in the game.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously highly covet defense. They haven't had it in their outfield for forever. It's going to be a real refreshing change of pace to have three guys on any given day out there that can all field their position. But man, he's got to hit better. He can't be what he is right now and not have this fear. To me, this is always the way I feel. Moreno has a chance to be special. Does Varsho? I'm not as convinced.
Hmm.
I've seen a bunch of stuff. My, you know, buddy Chris Black, who does excellent tweets, doing outlining threads, he kind of called it. So he's a little bit more invested. So, you know, he gassed up the player just a little bit too much because that's what happens when people make predictions. But for the most part, this guy obviously is very exciting. He's controllable. He's young. He fits a lot of the billing of what this team would want. I just, frankly, I don't want control to be at the high end of a list of why you're acquiring a player.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like that was a big part of it.
or why you're giving up such a...
Yeah, and again, I didn't think that that would be the asking price, and it still feels like a lot of these moves, to me, it just still feels like the Blue Jays offseason was they missed out a lot of the things that they would have rather have gotten done. And I'm not sure that trading their top prospect to address their outfield in that manner was priority number one or day one option. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was a splash. And I should say that the piece of giving up Lourdes to me matters. Everyone kind of dismissed it and they went, well, Lourdes doesn't feel his position and blah, blah, blah. First of all, like, he plays left field. So can we just dispense with this whole thing of the game is just chock full of incredible left fielders defensively? Come on. It's just, mm-hmm. Why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. But secondarily, Lourdes is a very popular guy on the team, and the guy had months. And I would always joke around with my buddy Sam. He always would have a month where he would just like basically put the team on his back offensively. Yep. Is Varsho going to have one of those months? I don't know. Anyway, I like Varsho. I think he's a really interesting guy. I love the way that he changes the dynamics on the bases. I think that he fits with the long-term future of the team. By all accounts, he's an absolute gamer.
Yep.
I think that he is going to become an immediate fan favorite. He's going to be good. He's going to be more of a WAR player than either of those other two guys. So you're better next season. There's no doubt about it. It just, I have a little fear about what that trade could become if Moreno's a stud, which I think is also fair.
Yep.
The other part of it is, I think it's a really interesting shot at Vladdy. And some people don't like to hear that, but they've moved off of two of Vladdy's best buddies. And they've brought in some real serious baseball dudes. And for those people that thought that the Jays were too mature, that they needed to take a step from that standpoint, I think that it's pretty clear, hey, Vladdy, if this is going to be your team, you're going to have to rake. You can't just be okay. You can't just be good. You have to be great.
Yeah.
And guess what? He has to be great for the Blue Jays to win a World Series. A lot of this still hinges on him being great and not good. So, yeah. It's going to be very strange watching the Blue Jays outfield next year, especially when George Springer obviously hits the IL, or what is it called? IR for
the IR. I will say that...
No, in baseball, it's a difference. Like, there's DL, but it's not. It is the IL. Yeah, I get confused now because I'm like, it's not the DL anymore. And I'm like, the IL still doesn't sound right to me. It's the IR. It's just, it's too many, there's too many weird...
There's too many variations.
Yeah, it's too many variations. But yeah, when George Springer inevitably misses 40 games next year and Kiermaier's an everyday player, they still have a move to make. And who's that other guy going to be? I hope it's a thumper. I hope it's a real bat.
Yeah, I will add. You mentioned outfield defense too. In terms of defensive runs saved, a combination of Gurriel, Springer, and Hernandez in 2022 would have had a -2.
Yeah.
And Varsho, Kiermaier, and Springer would have had 14.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You mentioned the outfield defense. There's a bit of context right there. The numbers
now
are
let's see
better.
Them score more runs than let's see them. Let's see what the runs for is of Teoscar Hernandez's bat, Lourdes Gurriel's versus those two guys. Because I'm pretty unconvinced that Kiermaier can hit a lick. So, yeah, Varsho's got to take a step. If Varsho is the exact same player he was last year, that's not good enough. He's got to take a step offensively.
I did see his home run overlay.
Yeah,
we all
seen
the
overlay chart.
Very cool. Very cool stuff.
Anyway, again, I like Varsho. I think he's going to be better.
Yeah.
He's, if it's the timeline, he's a better player. I love a defensive outfielder. I hope that he's the future center fielder of the team. And if he is, and he's a stud, and he's an all-star, then you won that trade.
Yeah.
But if he's not an all-star... then,
some questions.
It's kind of tough to justify what you gave up, even if Moreno does miss.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's next?
So other news coming out from Toronto sports teams. This one not nearly as positive. The Toronto Maple Leafs were fined $100,000 by the NHL for a travel violation. According to flight data, they left Toronto at 10:18 p.m. during the 2-day break that the NHL had of like no games, nothing, and they went early to St. Louis and they were fined $100,000. And then obviously Sheldon Keefe was also fined $25,000 during the game for demeaning officials.
Yeah, I mean, I don't...
Crazy scenes. I mean, I didn't even know, like, $100,000 for leaving an hour early?
No, it's fine. It's because it's the CBA. It's a hardline rule. I don't have any issue with it. I think I heard Elliot and Merrick's take on 32 Thoughts, and it's the exact right one. It's that the players were ready to go, they were early, and the Leafs said, hey, we're about winning, and they showed them with their pocketbook. And they flew out an hour early, and they said, yep, screw it. So I have zero issue with it. It's not a screw-up. Apparently, you're not supposed to ask the players even at all. You're not to insinuate it. No, it makes total sense, right? You want to be able to have work boundaries in a season. The players negotiated hard for that. you want to make sure that teams aren't pressuring guys to travel early. The Leafs trying to show that they're different.
Yep.
They showed up early. They were ready to rock and roll. They wanted to go. Leafs said, let's do it.
Yep.
We'll pay $100,000. That shows you how rich the Leafs are. Boy, that they just go, yeah, we'll cut $100,000 check. Yeah, Keefe obviously loses it on officials.
I kind of liked seeing him like that. They were showing Pat Burns, like, compared to him, and it was like, oh, nice. A little fire there.
Sure. I have no issue with it. Yeah, Keefe is a hothead at times. He runs hot. He gets frustrated. So I don't know what else to say about it. He's willing to take the lump. All right, last one quickly is the Kawhi thing, right?
Just Kawhi confessing his love for the Toronto Raptors, sharing how he had the chance to play either against the Pistons or the Raptors. He chose the Raptors.
Yeah, this is the most pathetic Raptors thing ever, that Raptors fans go, yes, he chose us over the Pistons in a back-to-back. Like, no duh. No freaking duh. It's literally the least he could do. It was the least thing he could
just
do.
And play.
And he's just like, yeah, I would rather give the fans of Toronto a chance to see me play. That was part of my decision. Like, yes, thank you, Kawhi, for giving the slightest care for the city of
Still
Toronto.
Remembers us.
Yeah, exactly. And people are going, yes! Yes, he cares more about this than the Pistons. That just shows, again, the insecurity of the fan base. I was shocked that this quote made the rounds. And people went, look at him go. Kawhi, what a good guy to us. He decided to play. Anyway, subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review if you're happy it's back. We're back. We're in it. I got Leafs talk again tonight, so you can listen to that later. James Myrtle tomorrow, Josh Palmer later in the week. We'll catch you then.